Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours. I'll actually be with you for 3 hours because the Council Connection show will be on this afternoon, but because councils are in caretaker mode, they weren't allowed to run the show, but I'll be interviewing the people that they would have interviewed today. But first of all, it's my absolute pleasure to interview Kirsten. Now, Kirsten's with the Breast Cancer Network of Australia. We've tried to talk to Kirsten once a year just to try and find out what the what's going on, and if we can help them along the line. I've just lost the lost vision, but anyway, we should be right. Welcome, Kirsten.
Hi, Alan. It's great to be with you again.
It's great to have you again also. First of all, I just want to talk to you. Last time we were out of COVID, but you were saying that the numbers for the ladies having their tests were still down. Have they improved? Or I read a report the other day that they might still only be at about 52% of the age group, the people that you think should be getting checked. Is that right?
That's right. So there was the latest data released from Breast Screen Australia. So that is all of the state and territories breast screens compile their data together. It looks like we're back to pre-COVID times, which of about 52% of women who are eligible for breast screening now going to breast screen. Now, that eligibility is interesting because once you turn 50, that's when you get your letter in the post to say between 50 and 75, we would like you to start having a breast screen every 2 years for well women. So when I mean that, I mean people who have no symptoms or any changes to their breasts. Right. So what we also know is around 7% of Australians go and have their breast screen privately, so they're paying for that breast screen service. So really, let's call it 60%, which from my perspective is not good enough. And really, we want to make sure that anyone over 40 is making sure that they go and participate in the breast screen program.
And now, while we're talking about the breast screen program, that's when it's free. But there are cases of ladies that still need to self-check themselves, don't they? Because there are cases at 25 and, well, like Delta Goodrum, I can't remember what age she was. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily discriminate with the older ladies either, does it?
No, that's right. I mean, breast cancer is more prevalent in people over the age of 50.
Yep.
But we certainly know that many young people are diagnosed. And that's why there's kind of always two messages to the public. One is once you turn 40, you can access breast screen. But if anyone notices any changes, and that's not just, I think often people just think it's a lump, but it could be anything. It could be rashes that won't go from your breast. It could be dimpling of the skin. It could be thickening of the skin. It could be feeling a bit lumpy and bumpy under your armpits. Any of those changes, then we want people to go to the GP. And you actually can't go to breast screen. You have to go to your GP and then have a different type of diagnostic imaging to really, we hope, make sure it's not breast cancer, which most people, it won't be breast cancer, but we want to find it early.
So, Kirsten, you've sort of stumped or shocked me a little bit there. Pardon me. And so could you just recap that? Because I thought it was only if the ladies found a lump, but it's not necessarily that. You need to check other things out as well. Could you just recap those again, please, Kirsten?
Yeah, so any change that you know, and, you know, I would say to people, we all know that our body is better than anyone else.
Absolutely.
So if you notice any kind of, like, a rash that won't go away, dimpling of the skin, so you might raise your arm up and your breast kind of looks different on one side from the other, where you might have thickening of the skin, or any discharge from the nipple, a feeling of lumps under your armpits, all of those should be investigated through breast imaging.
And I suppose it's best to go along to the doctor and have the test done and find out that it's a nothing, that it really you know, it's just part of aging or something, rather than all of a sudden finding out that they should have done it and they should have done it some time ago, isn't it?
Definitely. We know that the earlier we can find the breast cancer, the better the outcomes are, and it means often for many people it could mean less treatment, which has, we know all kinds of treatment has side effects, and so there are different short and long-term impacts from breast cancer treatment. But the earlier we can find it, the better the outcomes, and that's a really important message and something to encourage people to get it, everything checked out.
Kirsten, I just need to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. Talking to Kirsten, and she's the CEO of the Breast Cancer Network of Australia. Kirsten, I deliberately played Olivia Newton-John. I'm going to play another song for her in the next bracket. We know she did a lot of work for cancer. Did, when she got involved initially, did that sort of get your numbers up at all? I know generally for cancer she lifted the numbers, but what about for breast cancer?
Yeah, when anyone high profile is diagnosed with breast cancer, what it does do is put a very significant media profile onto the diagnosis, and will often remind people to go and have their breast checks. You know, we saw a similar phenomenon when Jolene was was diagnosed with, or had, prophylactic mastectomy. So that is that she knew she was a gene carrier and actually had her breasts removed. And we also saw an increase in the people looking at whether they had gene mutations. So certainly Olivia made a big difference for that. But I tell you where she made an enormous contribution was shining a very bright light into a dark corner for people living with metastatic disease. So that is that their breast cancers travel to other parts of their body, and that they are being treated for breast cancer, but not necessarily that they will not be able to be cured from breast cancer. And so what Olivia did was she really helped people who were living with that disease to feel seen, to feel heard, and to increase the awareness of that kind of very difficult end of a breast cancer diagnosis.
Oh, terrific. Kirsten, you mentioned there that about Jolene, about having, she felt she was a carrier, or she had the genes, and therefore she had a breast taken off. Now, I know a friend of ours did the same. She didn't have it, but her mother had it and her sister had it. Do you find that happens very often, that not because of the disease, but in case of the possibility of a disease, that they've had them taken off?
We know that around 5% of people diagnosed with breast cancer actually carry a breast cancer mutation. Right. One of the challenges, though, is that to even be tested for that, for genetic mutations, there has to be a family history. And so for people in the general population, that means that there needs to be three direct links to you. So it could be a father, it could be a mother, it could be a sister or three sisters all diagnosed with breast cancer. And that will trigger your opportunity to have access to genetic testing that is federally funded. So therefore you don't have any out-of-pocket costs.
It's a fairly high level of contact needed, isn't it?
Totally. And, you know, I think that that causes a lot of confusion. I obviously meet people every single day who've been diagnosed with breast cancer, and quite often people will say to me, there's no one else in my family. And that comes as a bit of a shock to people, because I think we overrepresent the people who are actually connected to breast cancer through their families. But in saying that, we also know that there's so much more we don't know about breast cancer yet. So we've got people in our network who have five sisters all having been diagnosed with breast cancer, but none of them carry a gene mutation, which means that we just don't know what that gene mutation is yet. So there's still a lot of research that has to happen in this area.
Gee. All right, we'll take one more quick break and I'll be back with more. Thanks, Kirsten. Kirsten, we did have this interview lined up for a month or so ago, and unfortunately you had to cancel it at fairly short notice, which was fine, because you had to go to a press conference. So do you want to tell us why you got called to Adelaide, please, to the press conference?
I would love to, because there's many moments in my career, Alan, that are considered highlights, and that was one of them. So we, as part of Breast Cancer Network Australia, one of our roles is to make sure that we advocate to government, to health professionals, to pharmaceutical companies, to make sure that all of our members or anyone living with breast cancer can access the very best treatment and care. And we know that that often comes at a cost.
Which
we have
sure
been advocating, well, of course it shouldn't, but no. we know that it does. And so we have been advocating for about 18 months now for a new drug called Enhertu, which we know from the clinical trials has been prolonging the life of people living with metastatic disease. So that's what I was talking about before, where we know it's treatable but incurable. And this particular drug has been keeping people alive for significant months. And we know that any months we can keep people alive means there's options for the new drugs to come through, but also it's making sure they're there for special occasions, for birthdays, for weddings, for milestones. And so this drug, we have been able to, through our advocacy, fast track it through the pharmaceutical benefit scheme. And I was delighted to be with the health minister, the Honourable Mark Butler, to announce that our network would no longer need to pay $200,000 for this drug, but would actually have it listed on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme. So now, as of the 1st of September, people will only have to pay $32 for
it. Oh, terrific, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was amazing. And we were there with one of our members who's been the face of this campaign. She'd paid $260,000 for this drug. She's been kept alive 22 extra months, and she has now run 10 marathons in those 22 months. So she, it gives me goosebumps just even talking about Sarah Lee. She's an absolute inspiration, and you know, goes to show that people can be living well with metastatic breast cancer. And so it was a pretty special moment. So I did miss you, Alan, I knew you'd be okay with what I was away for.
We were happy with that. We always would be happy, because one of the things, I mean, obviously anybody living with cancer, and particularly a lady with breast cancer, I mean, they shouldn't have to worry about whether they can pay for it, and they shouldn't be a case of discrimination. Well, this lady can afford to pay it, so she gets to live a bit longer. This lady can't afford it, so she's going to die sooner. I mean, that's just not fair.
Exactly. And, you know, Sarah Lee spoke about that at the press conference, and talking about making really hard decisions about where you spend your money. Are you spending it on creating memories with your family, or are you spending it on treatment to keep yourself alive for longer? Right. They're really difficult decisions that we don't think anyone should make. And, you know, we know that the cost of cancer is significant. And even, I think most people think, I've got private health insurance, so therefore I'm going to go through the private hospital system, and then get shocked by the bills that keep coming in for pathology, for anaesthetists, for acting surgeons. And so I really think people have often underestimated the cost of a cancer diagnosis. And so we feel very, very focused on the fact that we need to reduce the out-of-pocket costs and the financial impact of breast cancer on our network?
Well, the person, whether he male or female, I guess it affects the whole family, because we're talking about the family budget here. And why should they have to decide, well, you know, we've got to sell the house, or we've got to do this, or we've got to do that to keep somebody alive? I mean, that's just not a fair society.
No, totally. And I know that we did some financial... the impact of finances in breast cancer a couple of years ago. The interesting thing that we found was that actually after a breast cancer diagnosis, so this isn't even about people living with incurable breast cancer, but after an early breast cancer, the household income never returns to what it was before a diagnosis.
That
can be often for many reasons. One, people kind of look back at their life and go, you know what, I was close to retirement, I'm going to retire early, all of those kind of things. But quite often it is because the side effects of treatment can be so significant that people find it difficult to return to their senior roles, where they might no longer be able to multitask the same way that they did before because of their treatment. Or they might have physical disabilities like lymphedema, where their actual arm movement or leg movement is no longer like it was before. So there's lots of different reasons, but I think that was interesting for me that no household returned to the same income that they had before their diagnosis.
And I suppose too that in this day and age particularly, a lot of households are living on the two wages. And if a lady's suffering badly and she's got to give up work, that significantly drops the income to the family as well.
Exactly. And that one of the reasons why we provide a lot of resources for people navigating their way through at Breast Cancer Network Australia. And one of those is around the financials. So it's important after a diagnosis to... there's lots of people who want to help, right? A very practical way people can help is to actually, if someone's a financial advisor or financially savvy, is to give them all of your insurances and say, find out if there's a way we can access some trauma insurance or... So there's really interesting aspects that people often do not know until they link into organisations like BCNA, where we can help them to know where those little nuggets of financial support might be.
Terrific. I've got to take another quick break, Kirsten, and we'll be back with more. I'm talking to Kirsten, the CEO of the Breast Cancer Network of Australia. I know you've mentioned in the past, Kirsten, that men can get it, but there's no sort of screening for men for breast cancer, is there, as such?
No, so yes, 174 men will be told they have breast cancer this year. So it is it surprises many people.
Yeah.
They are normally found because a man will notice a change. And actually, men have exactly the same kind of breasts as we do. And in fact, their treatment is almost exactly the same as for women, where we will remove all of the breast tissue. So we all have breast tissue. And really the best way is for men to know the same messages. If they notice any change in their breastplate, then they should be going to the GP and letting them know. And we know, Alan, don't we, that sometimes men are a bit hopeless at not looking after themselves.
Sorry, I knew you were going to say that.
So we know that we have to be a bit more diligent in terms of telling them that not just for breast cancer, but any health changes, we want you to prioritise you, because you being around for our community is much more important than trying to be brave and do nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the other thing too that I'm fairly keen on, and I know I've mentioned to you this in each interview I've done, I think the lady's partner should take a bit of responsibility. Now, you don't bully the ladies, but and I've got daughters and I've got a wife, so I know, and you need to just sort of have that little bit of a say, well, now, you know, I don't want, it's none of my business, but are you keeping up your breast care, checks? Because let's face it, a diagnosis from for a lady, or it could be a man, but we'll talk mainly ladies now, affects not only the household budget, it affects, like, the partner could wind up by themselves looking after children and all this, and they don't want to lose their life partner just because somebody didn't take a test, do we?
Exactly. And I think having the conversation with your partners about your health is really important, because, and maybe some conversation starters could be about saying, oh, I heard the interview today, and are you having regular checks,
Do
you know what to do, and kind of utilising that as a springboard. But what you will find as well is, as people in your network become affected by breast cancer, I mean, 20,000 Australian women will be told they have breast cancer this year. We know hundreds of thousands of Australians are living after a breast cancer diagnosis. So most of us know someone affected. Yep. And what you will see is, when someone's diagnosed, it does trigger those conversations. And much more importantly, it triggers the action for people to go and do something about it. So use today as a kind of springboard to start the conversation. And I have no doubt that will lead to people in your that you care and love for actually going and prioritising their own health.
Kirsten, I've got to take one more quick break, because I've got another couple of questions I really want to put to you, but I've just got a couple of things I've got to take, and I'll be back in about just under 3 minutes.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
On the sidewalk leads to where I can't stop. Go there every night. I think he knows. His hands around a cold glass make me wanna know that body like it's mine. He got that boyish look that I like in a man. I am an architect, I'm drawing up the plans. It's like I'm 17, nobody understands. No one understands.
He got my heartbeat. I want you to smile, so I ain't gotta tell him I think he knows.
understand.
He's got my heartbeat, skipping down 16th Avenue. I mean, wanna see what's under that attitude. Like, I want you, that's my soul. I ain't gotta tell him I'm thinking of.
Indigo eyes, hand on my thigh, we could follow the sparks, I'll drive. Lyrical smile, indigo eyes, hand on my thigh, we could follow the sparks, I'll drive. So where we gonna go? I whisper in the dark, where we gonna go?
Talking to Kirsten, and she's the CEO of the Breast Cancer Network of Australia. Kirsten, you mentioned advocacy that you've fought for these drugs to get them on the cheap list, and I think that's terrific. What else does does your organisation do? And do people contact you when they're first diagnosed, or what part do you play in their lives?
Yeah, so we, Breast Cancer Network Australia, kind of has three areas of focus. One is about the advocacy and being the voice for those people affected, and that's to make sure that tomorrow someone who's diagnosed with breast cancer receives better care than they did yesterday or the day before, and so that's really important to us. The second is connection, and that's around providing people a place to come where they can connect with other people with a lived experience together. So our online network at bcna.org.au is amazing, Alan. Like, people are up in the middle of the night asking questions of each other, and they're supporting each other through their whole, not only when they're in treatment, but also when they come out the other end and want to return to life, but life actually has thrown themselves some curveballs. And of course, those people living with metastatic disease. And then our third is around information and support. So we have a helpline that people can call, and that number is 1-800-500-258. And our team there really know what the whole end-to-end of breast cancer is and can help people navigate through, not just someone who's diagnosed, but also their family, their friends, their work colleagues, because as you said before, when someone's diagnosed, it affects the whole community. And so people can call that helpline and find out things like questions they might have and can't find the answers to, and our team will help you to navigate through. Or maybe they have been diagnosed but haven't had access to a breast care nurse, so we will help to connect them through there. So there's lots of different roles that we do. BCNA, what we do know, I mean, we're a network of 200,000 people who've been affected by breast cancer.
Yep.
What we do know is that the day you're diagnosed, the world turns upside down and you get an onslaught of information. And then you too much information, yes. And then you kind of get navigated through the healthcare system. Some people go through public, some people through private, some people go through both. And often in Australia, you feel quite well supported then. And then for the people with early breast cancer, they're kind of told, hey, you've done the treatment, we've done the best we can, now go and live your life. Yeah. And they describe it as kind of falling off a cliff of all of a sudden they've had all this support and now they feel more alone than ever before. And they then all of the emotional stuff kicks in. And so BCNA really make sure that we have developed resources that help people to navigate through. They call it survivorship. It's not a very nice name, but like life after a diagnosis, how do you emotionally and physically repair after a diagnosis? And so we're really that network that takes what people have experienced and help other people navigate through. So I feel very lucky about what it is we do here to help people every single day after a breast cancer diagnosis. And for some people, that'll be 20 years later. They still have suffering side effects and need support, and we'll be there for them as well.
Kirsten, see, something that and you just brushed over it, as you were saying there, I can't imagine a person, a lady, we'll talk ladies, or no, we won't, we're men or ladies, who maybe during the day there's other people around them and, you know, they're doing this and they're doing their shopping and doing all sorts of stuff. But there must be some times at 1, 2, 3 in the morning when they really wake up and a bit depressed. So are you saying that they can get hold of somebody online during the night as well, are you?
Exactly. So our online network, what I do know for sure is that people don't sleep, and that this is a really safe place where people can put up questions and other people with a lived experience can provide their own insights. And there's particularly a group on there called Up Late at Night. And some of their messages, because we know that our mind, yep, if we wake up and we're worried, our mind actually finds it difficult to rest. Yes. And so having that place to go where other people who get it, right, so who really understand what you're going through, there's nothing more powerful than watching those people connect.
Well, because I was just going to say, see, it's no good them ringing Joe Blow or me or somebody else and saying, because it's no good of saying, oh, look, you'll be all right, you know, we know how you feel. None of us know how they feel. But if another person who's on that same track or down the track a bit further says, oh, this is all right, tomorrow this will happen, or, you know, yeah, that's part of the treatment, that'll happen, it's got to be very reassuring. And sometimes that's all people need, isn't it?
Exactly. People want to be heard and they want to feel supported, and that's what the network really does. I mean, we began in 1998, to be as big a network that we are now right across the country, to be a strong voice, but to watch people who have a lived experience meet each other. They might have the completely different lifestyle in so many ways, but their one connection of breast cancer can make friendships for life, and it's pretty special.
I reckon so. Kirsten, I've got to ask you, you're a very passionate lady about breast cancer, and I've spoken to you probably, I think it's about the fourth time, and I want to continue to catch up with you at least once a year. What made you, Kirsten, because I'll say this and I say it to everybody, anybody in these CEO positions could earn a lot more money working in the private enterprise. So what made Kirsten think, I want to get involved here?
Yeah, I never imagined when I went to university and did a Bachelor of Commerce and Arts that I would end up here, Alan, that's for certain. But what drew me to BCNA was that I met our founder, Lynn Swinburne, who herself was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1993. She was told over the phone while she was teaching a classroom full of kids with young kids herself, and she kind of felt like, there has to be a better way. They're talking all about my tumour. They're not talking about me and seeing me as a woman, as a mother, as a daughter. And she just knew we had to do something different. And so she really began BCNA by bringing women together who'd all had different experiences of the healthcare system to say we have to do better. So I met Lynn in 2005 and I instantly got it. I was instantly inspired by what she wanted to do. And so I kind of feel like I've grown up in the organisation. I was the 9th staff member. and now I lead a team of 40 very passionate women and men who all want to make a very big difference. So for me, it absolutely was Lynn, and I still stay connected with her. And now I've got 200,000 other women like Lynn who I want to make sure I'm there for. And they really are the stories of the women and men diagnosed, their families, that drive me every single day to want to do more, do better, even if the pay isn't what it could be, Alex.
It won't be, I can tell you. But that's just life. Anybody who takes on these sorts of CEO positions in these sorts of organisations are never going to earn the money. So they're not driven by you're not driven by money. Otherwise, you'd be out earning a lot more money. End of story.
Definitely. And I think the stories stay with you. I feel very privileged and lucky to have spent time with incredible women and men who sadly have died, but they have taught me some of my greatest lessons in life, and they certainly teach me to be very present. They teach me to love my family better than I think many people who haven't had to experience grief. And so, you know, I am constantly inspired and constantly learn from these incredible women and men in our network. I feel super lucky.
Kirsten, I don't want to go and we don't want to identify. Have you found over your journey that there is one or two people that have just affected you a lot more than others?
Yes, certainly. And I am happy to identify one, and that is the late Peter Murphy, who was the member for Dunkley, who died last year, in December last year. She was a powerful advocate who people may remember went into Parliament just days before she died. And she did that because she wanted to do some advocacy for us. And one of the greatest gifts people can give you is their time. And Peter did that, and she understood the power that she had as a federal politician, and she understood that she could make a very big difference. And every single day I miss her, and she really taught me a lot.
Oh, that's terrific. Kirsten, look, we're fast running out of time, unfortunately. We've still got a couple of minutes. Could you just run through all the contact details for anybody who's listening to, because it might not, and if you could repeat them twice, but it might not be the person that's going to be diagnosed, but it could be the partner, it could be the grandfather, grandmother of somebody who has or will be diagnosed. So could you just run through all those for us, please, Kirsten?
I definitely can. So Breast Cancer Network Australia is here for anyone affected by breast cancer. And I often hear people say the greatest gift they ever got given was to be connected into our organisation. So even if you haven't been diagnosed, please know you can connect with us. So the best way to do it is we've got a helpline, which is 1-800-500-258. So that's 1-800-500-258. So that's our telephone line, Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. And then our website is bcna.org.au. So that's bcna.org.au. But otherwise, just put us in a Google search. You will find us through Breast Cancer Network Australia. And we will be here for whatever you need. And we are so grateful that you provide us with this opportunity, Alan, to connect with the local community so that they know that we're here for them.
Happy to do that. Kirsten, do you have a Facebook page?
Yes, we do. So all of our social media is, you can find through Breast Cancer Network Australia if you just do a search through that in Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it, Alan, we're there.
Kirsten, look, it's terrific to talk to you. I wish we didn't have to talk to you. I wish that there was no such as breast cancer, but obviously there is, and we would be sticking our heads in the ground if we didn't agree. And so, look, it's terrific for you to come on, and I just hope that we get some people, maybe not today, it might be years' time when they get diagnosed, that they get in touch with your organisation. And we thank you for your time today, and we wish you all well in the future.
Thank you, Alan. Just make sure if you see any changes in your breasts, men or women, that you go and get them checked out.
No worries. Thanks, Kirsten. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot.